everybody. Welcome to Pretty Scary.
Pretty Scary Boo.
Caitlin. Fine. You know what? We're just going to move on.
We're going to ignore you too.
We're just going to carry on as if you're not even here. Fine. How's it been going since we recorded last?
It's going pretty well.
So much has gone on.
Yeah, so much has went on.
I got an Amazon delivery. We got more wah. That's short for water.
Good. You got an Amazon delivery. What do you get? Oh, your light, right? For your live.
I need another light so we can live stream in this bitch. This is part two of our episodes about It Was Him. The many, 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 many murders.
Supposed murders.
Of Ed Edwards. Mm-hmm. Edward Wayne Edwards. And we're on to episode four now, which is called A Double Life. And I thought this one was pretty fascinating.
This one was really interesting. I don't know if I should get my theory right off the top. Let's just dive into it.
All right. It covers two different, it actually covers a few different pretty major murders in the span of this episode. One of the biggest being Jimmy Hoffa. And that's an interesting case, but also Teresa Halbach. And that one's a little more tenuous, but we'll get into them both. And then there's one that's not as famous that not a lot of people know about, the Robison family murders.
Yeah, and I felt like they glazed over it a little bit. And it was just kind of like thrown in. And then and I feel like I've heard about it before, but then it was just kind of on to the next.
Yeah. Well, they spent a little time on the Robison murders, but I'd never heard anything about it. And it is an interesting case. It's still an unsolved case.
I feel like I have, but, you know, so many family murders and cabins in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Who can keep track?
I can't.
And who can pick a favorite? That's why I choose to not keep track, because then I'll be forced to pick a favorite cabin slaughter from the 50s or 60s.
Of an entire family.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm not going to be forced to make decisions like that. I prefer to just
enjoy things. I want to treat all of my cabin family homicides equally.
Equal.
I don't have a favorite. It's like having multiple children. You're all my favorites.
Right, right. You're all my dead children.
Is that going to be edited or we're leaving that?
It's the new motto of the podcast.
I love all my dead children.
Yeah. You are all my dead children.
With two S's as an homage to Ed Edwards.
Oh, I like that. Or as an homage to the Zodiac. So you do admit he's the Zodiac killer. Okay, we've
got that. I admit that he uses double S's incorrectly, unless he really was trying to spell bussiness.
Why don't you mind your bussiness?
No.
No, that was pretty good.
Nope.
So let's talk about Jimmy Hoffa first. This one is goddamn fascinating. In his book, Metamorphosis of a Murderer, which actually I don't think it comes out around this time, but in the mid-70s, Ed Edwards befriends Jimmy Hoffa in prison. They end up being cellmates.
Which prison? Was that the...
I think this was a different prison. I think...
Where was Jimmy Hoffa at? I feel like it was like the Midwest?
Probably. Well, he was killed in Detroit, or he lived in Detroit. He was based in Detroit, so
yeah,
I'm sure it was a prison somewhere in that vicinity. But he befriends Jimmy Hoffa in prison. Jimmy Hoffa gets him a job that he needs to get out of prison. One of the conditions of his parole, and this is Ed Edwards' parole, is that he has to have a job waiting for him when he gets out.
Such a weird condition, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess he wanted make sure as much as possible is in place to make sure they don't just offend again.
I don't know. I guess I'd figure you start at like a halfway house. Like, it's very hard, I think, for parolees or somebody who was convicted of a crime to get a job. So,
oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah. I guess he was fortunate to find this one with Jimmy Hoffa. And I thought at one point they said that they were cellmates.
They were. Yeah, they were cellmates. And Jimmy Hoffa gets him a job driving trucks with the Teamsters Union. And one of the people they interview is like, that was unheard of at the time. Like, it was very rare to just get inserted into that position within the Teamsters. So Ed Edwards not only knew Jimmy Hoffa, he knew him well enough that Hoffa got him a job. And he writes in Metamorphosis of a Criminal that they became friends and hung out on a few occasions. And in this episode, we also... I think they did kind of conclusively prove it at one point, but Ed Edwards was an FBI informant, which is fascinating to me.
Like, it would be interesting to delve more into that aspect of him, because he did befriend several cops too.
Yeah, in the Atlanta child murders, he lived with the captain or the chief of the Atlanta Police Department.
Yeah,
which that's insane. And but he, that's what he would do. He would insert himself into these crimes.
Shows what a smooth talker he is.
Right. So with Jimmy Hoffa, what's really interesting to me, just the fact that he was in this close proximity to a known serial killer at the time he disappeared. I mean, that makes us, Ed Edwards, at least kind of a suspect, because we don't really know who killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Let's chat about motive. Why would he kill the guy who just got him a job unless he just didn't really want to work?
Well, John Cameron's wild theory, which is in, this is also in Metamorphosis of a Criminal, he tells a story about Jimmy Hoffa having called Ed Edwards a homo in prison. And John Cameron is convinced that that would be enough, because with Ed Edwards, killing was just a thing he did. So for him, what John Cameron argues is that would be enough to where he would be like, oh, I'm a homo. Okay, well, maybe I'll kill you 4 or 5 years down the road. And it's not a great motive, but also we're not talking about an average person. It's not like we're not asking what would take this average man who is just driving trucks for the Teamsters to suddenly kill Jimmy Hoffa. We're asking what would make a legitimately deranged serial killer decide to kill Jimmy Hoffa. That could just be, hey, baby, I feel like I could kill you right now and get away with it, and I'm going to do that.
The reason that I think that Ed Edwards did not commit this is only because of the mafia ties that Jimmy Hoffa had and the fight, the fist fight that he got into with Caprio?
Tony Pro.
Yeah, but they call him, I don't know, they call him something, like in Mob World?
Oh, Capo?
I think so.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But he had gotten to a fist fight with him, and they talk about Ed Edwards had to pull them apart. And then the guy that he got into the fist fight with was just kind of like, you know, you're dead, scum. Like, you're going to get yours kind of thing. And then he had went to lunch. Jimmy Hoffa went to lunch with him the day that he disappeared.
But did he go to lunch with him? All they know is he left for a meeting that was supposed to be with him.
Right.
But the last time he was seen, he was pacing around really angry, as if maybe he'd been stood up, and then he goes out to a payphone to make a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't it be just as possible that this serial killer, who kind of takes pleasure in committing murders and casting suspicion on other people for them, might have seen that as an opportunity to go, oh, what if I set up a meeting? Because this guy was in Jimmy Hoffa's, like, he was close enough to that fight that he was sitting next to Jimmy Hoffa. He could have been like, well, I could just tell him that they're going to meet at this restaurant. And then when he gets all pissed off and leaves and bolts out to the parking lot, I just fucking take him and murder him. And it's not a rational thing, but this isn't a rational guy. And I don't think it's, because they've never solved the case. They never convicted anyone of killing Jimmy Hoffa. They don't know where his body is.
Well, that's the thing. I know you're going to argue this, but I don't think Ed Edwards was really known for hiding bodies where the mafia is.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe I'm just going with the grain, but it just seems like, you know, whatever his dealings were with the union and the Teamsters and then the mafia, yeah. My guess is that it's something in that world. You know, it is interesting that he knew Ed Edwards. I think that's fascinating. I mean, honestly, what are the chances that he's...
It's a crazy connection.
6 degrees of Ed Edwards. If that were a game, that would be interesting to play. But yeah, I don't think it's Ed in this case. But his tie into him is, I think, fascinating.
It's fascinating that he's on the scene of all of these famous, like when the Zodiac killings happen, we know he's in California. When the Atlanta child murders happen, he's arrested in Marietta, Georgia, right around that time.
He looked jolly. He could have dressed up like Santa Claus for Joan Benet.
Yeah, that's the next thing is after Jimmy Hoffa, which I think it's as good a guess as anything else. Like,
it's an interesting guess. I don't think it's a correct one, but I don't think it's outlandish like some of the other theories that he has.
Yeah. I feel like the FBI was so honed in on Jimmy Hoffa at the time that if someone who wasn't on their payroll did it, they would probably know. That's the other thing that, like...
So if you're saying if Ed Edwards was an FBI informant, they would have known?
I think they probably wouldn't have wanted it to come out that an FBI informant killed him. And
but they also could have and then taken him down and then, you know, made an example out of him, too.
Yeah. Yeah, who, maybe the FBI had Ed Edwards kill Jimmy Hoffa, and that's why there's the hidden body aspect, because the FBI was like, we got it from here. Don't worry. We know you're a crazy serial killer, kid. Just
yeah,
go skull fuck Jimmy Hoffa, have your fun, and then call us when you're done.
It does kind of make you wonder, too, how many like killings or whatever the FBI is behind. You know, like how much corruption.
Well, they put it way at the end of this documentary, but there's a killing they end up investigating in Portland where Ed Edwards very clearly did it. Like at this murder, one of the victims shot a bullet through the windshield trying to get the attacker to go away. And Edwards shows up the next day with a bullet wound to his arm. So the police are like, well, you were going to arrest, obviously, and ask you some questions. And Ed Edwards makes a phone call, and someone calls the jail after he makes that phone call, and Ed Edwards is just released.
And then disappears and turns up on the FBI's most wanted, correct?
Right, but they also wrongly convict two people in that murder.
Yeah, when they talk to them, that's actually sad. I know we're going to get into that.
Yeah,
later.
We'll get into it, but... So, yeah, the first part of episode 4 deals with Jimmy Hoffa, and they obviously don't have a ton of evidence, but it's an interesting connection.
Oh, Tony Provenzano.
And that's who he was last seen. He was on his way to a meeting with Tony Pro, allegedly. But it also, from the description of events, seems like Tony Pro wasn't there, because they describe Hoffa as kind of pacing around angry. And then he goes out to a payphone, and they never see him again.
I don't know, but there's lots of things you can get angry about. For example, the other day I was in a really good mood, and then I got my nails done. And then while my nails were drying, I accidentally stubbed my toe on a chair, and it messed up the nail polish. And I was furious.
Yeah.
Started throwing things.
Did you run out to a payphone?
Fucking kidding? And then I ran out to a payphone. First, I took one of those Lysol wipes.
You
know
who
uses a payphone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I made some calls.
Yeah. That's what you do.
Collect.
And sometimes...
I thought I was angry.
You get murdered in the process, like Jimmy Hoffa. Rest in peace.
R.I.P. But what if he isn't dead? What if he's hanging out with Amelia Earhart? Did we ever find her?
I don't know. She's probably in Argentina with all the other celebrities who didn't die when we thought they did. Like Elvis. I'm an Elvis truther now.
Tupac.
Yep. Living in Argentina. What a great sitcom that would be. Just a bunch of old celebrities who aided law enforcement in investigations and had to flee to Argentina to live the rest of their lives in the shadow of Hitler, because I think he went there too.
What would they call it?
Hitler Town.
Yeah, I'd want to say Full House, but I mean, it can't be that. Like S Town, like Shit Town, like that podcast, Hitler Town, C Town, Celebrity Town.
Yeah. Informantville.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad.
Informant Town.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we cracked it. Informant Town, but it's all one word. Informant and then just an own at the end. Mash it all together. A portmanteau, if you will.
One of us has a pilot's license village.
That's good.
Okay.
Very
succinct.
Well,
we could go on all day.
We could do this forever. It's what we do. They talk about another case in this episode, the Robeson family murders, which we just talked about a little bit. And this is a pretty fascinating case. This is another one John Cameron believes that Ed Edwards did. And Wayne Wolf also. There's a scene at the end where Wayne Wolf is telling his dad all the murders he thinks granddad actually committed. And one of them, he's like, there was this family called the Robesons. It's one of the biggest mass slayings in Michigan history. He did that. And I think they do make a pretty compelling case for it.
I agree.
This one, all they know about this family is that they were going to pick up a man named Mr. Robert, which so much you could do with that name, like Mr. Robber, like be a little more creative, I guess. But that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Mr. Robert. And all anyone knows is Mr. Robert is someone that they heard Mr. Robinson having an argument with on the phone the day before about a $250,000 check. And in the book Metamorphosis of a Criminal, there is a story about a murder that happened pretty much exactly like this. And what John Cameron thinks happened is somehow Ed Edwards convinced this Mr. Robinson to invest in something he was doing, pretty much probably with the intention of just stealing money from him. And then after this argument happens, he says, okay, I'm going to fly into town and bring you your check. The family picks him up at the airport, takes him back to the house. Maybe they eat dinner. And then Ed Edwards just fucking slaughters the entire family.
And they played cards. It said, I think the sons were kind of like stacked up on one of the heaters because they wanted to, whoever the murderer is, wanted to speed up the decomposition. There was also something in the book, and this was a little confusing, about like the youngest son who was like 13 on a plane.
I think he meant that, they didn't do a great job of clarifying what that meant, but I think what they were saying is that story was kind of an allegory for the murder, where this 13-year-old kid who's jiggling the emergency exit door is actually the 13-year-old kid who was murdered, and his body was found right by the front door.
Right.
And their speculation there is that that's him talking about how this kid was jiggling the front door.
And he said, like, I survived jail to die at, like, this kid who's trying to be smart.
Right.
His hands, his actions.
And I think he did that. I think that they do a good job pinning that murder on him. It's still an unsolved crime.
Of this family? Yeah, I agree, too. Interesting, though, because it's like $250,000, especially then, was a huge investment.
That was a ton of money back then.
So it's like, what con was it? It's interesting to me, and I know cons happen, but it's like, if you're a smart business person, like, what are you agreeing to? You know what I mean? Like, how well do you know this person? Like, what is this?
Yeah, I think it gets to a point, and I'm not rich, so I can't. But
yeah,
also,
I'll never know.
Who the fuck cares if you speak on behalf of rich people? Fuck them. I can't know for sure, but I think once you get to a certain level and you have a certain amount of money, you kind of feel like, oh, well, I understand people who have a lot of money also, and I can tell the difference between someone who really has money and someone who's just pretending, and a lot of them can't. And they meet these people who, like, I knew a girl once who dated a guy who literally just went around the country, and they would fucking get a hotel somewhere, a nice hotel, and go to the fucking lobby, and he would just start basically hitting on people, dudes, women, but not hitting on them sexually, just like hitting on them, like trying to gain their trust and friendship and confidence. And he would eventually present himself as a business person who would invest, they could invest money with. And within the span of a week, he would have all this investment money from people, and he would just fucking leave town. And he would just repeat this process all around the fucking country. Yeah. And it's just, there's going to be gullible people at every level of society.
And it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to invite somebody into your home and give them dinner and, you know, and pick them up from the airport, but especially to, you know, again, take them into your house and with your family being there, I mean, there's got to be a lot of trust. And
right.
A lot of con men are very likable and affable.
And once you've invested that amount of money, there's not just trust. I'm assuming there's some level of not wanting to believe you fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
And just
100%.
Wanting it to be like, okay, he's coming out here, so at least we know it's valid now. He wouldn't fly out here. And then the guy fucking murders the entire family.
Yeah, I think it was like 2010. Like, me and my brother got caught up in like some scam and he lost a bunch of money. And I never reported it to the police because I was so embarrassed.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, you don't want it to happen to somebody else, but there's a lot of like, we're both smart, you know, we're called like, how did we get so wrapped up in this, you know, it was, and it had to do with like the housing market and, you know, it's over and like done with now, but it's kind of like, you know, you see there was some solace in like, but so many people got fucked over. It wasn't just me.
Right.
I don't know. It's crazy, but yeah, there was a lot of embarrassment with it. So yeah. I do get that.
Yeah. And it, yeah. So this is one of the crimes I think he did, and they've never solved it. So he's not, with this one, he's not really presenting a crazy theory that flies in the face of everything we think about the Robeson murders. It's just, all anyone knows is Mr. Robert came to the airport and then this family was dead.
Right.
The few days later. But I think when you compare it to the Danny Boy Edwards killing, where he just had this thought where he was like, you know, it'll take me a year, but I could kill this guy and make a couple $100,000 and live off that for a while. And so it's not outside his MO to do something like this that would require some planning and some execution. Oh, bad choice. I mean, some literal execution.
Yeah, literal execution. Is that your execution button?
Yeah, that's the execution horn. But at the end of this episode, they get into the Teresa Halbach case. And
they don't have much on this one.
They don't have much. There's a Zodiac letter that does look like it's meant to imply that a very low intelligence person wrote it. But,
and it has like block writing, I think, unless that's another one.
Yeah. But John Cameron, the problem is the connection here. John Cameron says, oh, well, the reporter who got sent the clue letter back in the 70s by the Zodiac was Paul Avery. And now Ed Edwards, who was the Zodiac, is living in Wisconsin. And now this Stephen Avery is all over the news. So he's like, ding, 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 there's a connection I can make. I should probably go frame Stephen Avery for murder.
Right.
And everything about, I don't believe anyone's theory about this case. I don't believe John Cameron. I don't believe the police. I don't fucking believe anyone. I don't know what the fuck happened.
You don't think it's Stephen Avery?
Fuck no, it's not Stephen Avery. Where would the, they didn't find any blood in that bedroom where she was shot in the head.
But they found her bones, a burn pile, her car, his blood in her car.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that goes into it a lot more in Making a Murderer, the documentary.
Oh, I've watched,
like, with a grudge.
I've watched it. I do not think Stephen Avery.
I definitely don't think it was his doofus nephew, Brendan, who, by the way, I wrote in prison and he wrote me back.
Yeah, I don't think it was either of them. Even if you have to bring Occam's razor into it and say, oh, well, which one, like, is it really more reasonable that a guy who was wrongly convicted would immediately get out and be on the verge of this huge windfall settlement in a lawsuit and would in that moment decide to finally become a murderer? Or did the police department have more to gain by him going to prison as a murderer? That was going to bankrupt them.
But why her?
Because who else? They knew she was out there regularly. Who else? I mean, they needed someone.
So you think she was a sacrificial lamb for the police department?
I kind of.
There's definitely something weird going on with the police department. Ken Kratz somehow makes his Weasley way into this documentary. Not a Ken fan. I met him at CrimeCon.
Yeah, I could have done without Ken Kratz showing up in this.
Just keeps getting more unlikable.
And he's just so, because they're interviewing the prosecutor who is at the center of Making a Murderer, where everyone's saying, hey, you convicted the wrong guy. And that's not who you bring this theory to. You're not going to sell him in the space of a conversation. He had the entirety of that trial to be sold on the idea that someone other than Stephen Avery committed this murder, and it didn't work. So it was a bad place to start. And it goes as bad as you would expect.
Ken Kratz, I mean, was being relatively like nice to John Cameron. And again, I don't know what kind of editing went into this, you know, for him to go back, Ken, and, you know, be like, oh, you're right, that makes sense. I mean, that's tough and he's probably not going to do it. He actually handled it okay, I thought. I think some of that might be because he had a lot of scandal after the case with like sexual texts, etc.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So,
but he doesn't do a great job of proving.
So I think the two things they say about Ed Edwards with this one is that they think that possibly he was just like a nice old man who would hang out around this junkyard.
Right.
And got familiar and got friendly with Teresa Halbach. And then because I think the gunshot was like the side of the left side of the head and then like in the back execution style, but I think on the right side, that maybe he like waved her over to ask her a question or something. She knew him, felt comfortable, rolled down her window, and then like, you know, he shot, right, et cetera. Although her blood wasn't in the car.
And even that, I'm like, where's her blood? Like, why is her blood not in that car?
But the video where they show that news report where, yes, they're reporting, I think, at the trial, or, and they're like, there's an old man, and it looks just like, this is what John Cameron says, looks just like Ed Edwards.
And it does.
It does. I still don't think it's him, but they're like, he just likes to insert himself, so that's probably, he wants to be in the middle of it, but something where nobody like sees him or recognizes, yeah, him, or he just looks like, you know, anybody else. And at that point, he was 70. I mean, he was older.
He was old. Disposing of the body would have been the harder thing for someone of his age.
Right.
Because just the shooting her in the head. But also, like, cleaning the blood out of the car and, like,
it's a lot of work.
I don't know what happened in the Stephen Avery case, but I feel like it's not that Stephen Avery murdered this woman.
Yeah.
But there's just not enough tying this guy to it. But it's so weird that with this guy, even when you can't prove he was there, and I'm talking about Ed Edwards, there's so many famous murders where you also can't prove he wasn't there. Like, it's either, yes, we know where he was, or we're like, we don't know where he was. And he was obviously in Wisconsin at some point in his, yeah, later years, because that's where he lived when he was arrested. Or did he live there when he was arrested? I know that's where he eventually ended up because the crime happened in Wisconsin.
But I don't know.
He did live in Wisconsin for several years throughout his life.
I love that one of your notes is, I think interviewing Ken Kratz bitch ass was a mistake.
I do. I just don't like the vibe that guy gives off. And this is also where Wayne Wolf started getting on my nerves a little.
See, I didn't mind him.
Because he would get, it's like, be a better teammate, dude. Like, this guy's,
but they're not on the same team. That's the thing. They're not.
But he's asking for all this help in finding information about the murders his grandfather committed. And it's like, John Cameron is on, you're on the same path. He's also trying to figure it out. And Wayne Wolf would just get so frustrated whenever John Cameron couldn't sell this person, like in the span of one conversation, couldn't sell this person on, no, everything you think is wrong and what I think is right. That's a process. He was just trying to open the door. And Wayne would just get so bitchy about it. Remember, there's that scene where John's like, go have a smoke.
You better bet I will. I've earned this cigarette.
You don't have to tell me. Twice. I earned this cigarette.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely were both being little bitches at the end,
yeah,
which I, of course, madly appreciated. Because you don't really see that, especially with guys.
Yeah, there's a really emotional moment when John calls his daughter.
Well, that's what kind of started. I mean, there was a little bit of speculation on Wayne's part, but it was the first time you heard John, who's like, you know, he's just as frustrating as his grandpa. You know, this week's been really hard for me. But literally, John Cameron, if you didn't agree with all of his ideas, he got upset. He got visibly upset at any sort of rebuttals.
Yeah.
I also think, though, with Wayne Wolf, if, yeah, he found somebody who knew his grandpa, which, again, 10 months maybe isn't forever. So when John Cameron's like, well, you know, I wrote him for 10 months, like, I knew him really well. Well, I mean, still, you're dealing with a con man. How well do you really know him? Two, it's just through letters and phone calls, again, right, less than a year, technically. But you found somebody interested in this case, who was versed in this case, but who was also so right-wing, left, you know, to one extreme, an extremist about this case. There's a case called The Disappearance of Maura Murray.
Okay.
So this girl goes out. She's like 20 years old. Anyway, she's driving her car. there's a whole backstory to it. I think her and her boyfriend had broken up. She'd just gotten kicked out of, I think, like military school for shoplifting. And then she says, I think there's like a illness or something in the family. So she was supposed to take a final. And then, I don't know. Anyway, so she ends up in this remote place and they find her car and they never to this date have found her. They don't know if somebody came along and kidnapped her.
Yeah.
If, you know, she ran off into the woods and then froze to death because it was winter, and then did animals eat her? You know, there's like so many different possibilities. But there is this author, James Renner, which reminds me a lot of, you know, John Cameron, where he's very extreme in his ideas, and like Maura Murray's family is like, we won't talk to him. Like, he's come out with all of these theories that hurt our family. Like, we just want to know the truth. But some of your theories are so extreme, and that's what it reminds me of. So it'd be like if you're like, I want to know more about Maura Murray, but then that's who you team up with.
Right.
A guy who obviously has very extreme opinions that aren't popular.
Yeah. They are unpopular opinions. Right?
Unpopular opinion.
Opinion finger me. So yeah, they talk about the Stephen Avery case, and that's one that I still feel like needs to be looked into more. And they are he does kind of suggest that Stephen Avery's current lawyer is kind of going down that same path.
I think they're making a part two of the documentary.
Yeah, and I think they are going to argue that he was set up or framed and someone planted evidence. But just not necessarily Ed Edwards. Or maybe she thinks it's Ed Edwards, too. Who knows? But the next episode, episode 5, is called Mama's Boy. And this is where it gets really hard to watch. Because this is John Cameron really swinging for the fences. And they cover two murders. One, did Ed Edwards kill Lacey Peterson? And also, did Ed Edwards kill the Black Dahlia? Which, that's a crazy idea. But they, when the episode opens, they kind of talk about it a little bit. And there's one interesting part in the intro that I swear doesn't show up in the episode. And it might even be the intro to the first episode. But John Cameron says, when the Black Dahlia was in Chicago, she took a picture with a young boy. And that boy was Ed Edwards.
Yeah.
And that doesn't come up in the episode.
I thought it did.
I know that
I did remember that part.
They talk about her meeting Ed Edwards, but I don't remember seeing that in the, and maybe I just missed it, but they kind of gloss over it at first, and then, and
that she kind of like blew him off because she was pretending to be a reporter or an investigator.
Reporter looking into the lipstick murders, which Ed Edwards, John Cameron also says Ed Edwards committed, which, the thing about these two murders, he would have been 12 and 13 when he did it. It did kind of send me down a rabbit hole looking into the lipstick murders. And, oh, did I put the link in here or not? Let me pull it up. Because one thing that is interesting about the lipstick murders is the guy that they arrested for those actually wasn't that much older than Ed Edwards at the time and looks a shit ton like him now.
5 years older. So 1928 versus Ed Edwards was born in 33. I mean, that's 18.
Yeah, yeah. But they were both teen. I think this guy was 17 when he committed these murders. But he has always maintained that his confession was coerced and that he did not do it. But they kind of gloss over that. John Cameron's like, yeah, he committed the lipstick murders and when he was 12. And then says the Black Dahlia came to Chicago looking for information about those murders and met mm-hmm. Ed Edwards. And Cameron says, yeah, it was the killer just feeding her information about the killings. And then, yeah, kind of implies that she dissed him mm-hmm. in some way and that this prompted him to go to L.A. and find her and hunt her down and kill her.
In Chet Wilde's backyard.
Literally in Chet Wilde's backyard.
Fact.
You can check into the Black Dahlia murder site from Chet Wilde's backyard. And there are some weird coincidences. She's dropped at the corner of Degnan Street, mm-hmm. which is the name of one of the girls killed in the lipstick murders, mm-hmm. and Norton Street, which is the name of a town where he would go on to commit some Lover's Lane killings in Ohio. It was Norton, Ohio. But that would have been before he committed those Norton, Ohio killings, because he was 13 at the time.
Right.
And
can you imagine being a jet-setting 13-year-old in the, what, 40s?
Yeah, just traveling cross-country to murder young women who diss you in Chicago.
But, like, how?
Yeah, that's where this gets really hard to watch, because of all the interviews where John Cameron does a bad job presenting his case, this one is the worst.
Yeah.
Because he keeps bringing up this psychological profile that he had seen of Ed Edwards as a child, which said at age 13, he was a psychopath and was capable of very violent rage and explosive behavior. And John just keeps hitting on that, even when more than one person brings up, but how would a kid of 13 have that much surgical knowledge?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's been the theory for a long time, solely on the fact that I believe she bled out, right? Like in a bathtub. Like it wasn't, like almost all of her blood was gone.
Right. She was drained of all her blood.
And then they found her, you know, with all of those incisions and mutilations, which again, he's not known for, in a field / Chet Wilde's backyard.
Right. And at 13, he probably wasn't driving. So, well, I don't know. Actually, that I don't know, because I don't, the United States was a lawless hellscape pretty much forever. But back then it was like, yeah, if your kid's good at it, they can drive, I'm sure. So who knows if he was driving.
Same with drinking in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Your parents okay.
Yeah.
Then
it's
fine. Fucked up.
But how would he have moved the body around and all?
And then to find those streets. I mean, did they have Thomas guides back then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't know LA.
That's quite a fucking coincidence. And it's like, he does such a bad job. It's preposterous that a 13-year-old would have committed this crime. And that's why I wish this guy would just stay on the Zodiac Killer shit.
Well, again, and then he gets very upset when he's, you know, when anybody is like, this just doesn't make sense. He gets very adamant. Like, the look on his face is, you know, it's what Wayne said. Like, he hasn't been checked for years. So he's built up these theories without a lot of fact. It's a ton of speculation and coincidence.
Yeah.
And he runs with it.
And insanely enough, because at this point in the episode, John gets the sense that Wayne is becoming a little skeptical. He goes, okay, well, I know it'll change your mind. What if we fly out to California and I try to convince you Ed Edwards killed Lacey Peterson? Which,
that'll get him.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Lacey Peterson. Oh, wait, we have to fucking read this. I said I went kind of down a rabbit hole looking into the lipstick murders and the guy who was actually arrested for him. This is the story of his arrest. On June 26, 1946, 17-year-old William Hirons was arrested on attempted burglary charges when someone saw him breaking into an apartment. As Hirons fled, the building's janitor pursued him and blocked his path out of the building. However, Hirons allegedly pointed the gun he was carrying at the caretaker, saying, "Let me get out, or I'll let you have it in the guts." The janitor ceased his pursuit. Hirons made his way to a nearby building to lie low, but a resident spotted him and called the police. As Hirons attempted to escape down a staircase, two officers closed in, one at each end of the staircase. Trapped, Hirons brandished a revolver, perhaps pointing the barrel at one officer. Some reports state that he actually pulled the trigger, but the gun misfired. In the police account, Hirons charged them after his gun misfired twice. In Hirons' version, he turned and attempted to run after bluffing with the gun, and the cops charged him. A scuffle resulted that only ended when an off-duty policeman dropped three clay flower pots on Hirons' head, one at a time, from the top of the stairs, rendering him unconscious. That is the best ending. Like, that
like
is
a cartoon.
That is absolutely some cartoon shit. And three, and just nailed it.
Where he just keeps bending down and picking him up. So the first one, like, stuns him. So he, like, or he has all three, like, in his.
Or was it like police brutality, where the first one clearly caved his skull in and the guy's just like, that, two more for good measure. Could go either way. I wish there was video.
I feel like the first one dazed him. The second and third were to make a point.
Yeah, it's a very entertaining ending. There's also, I won't read it, but if you go on the Wikipedia page for the Lipstick Murders, look into George Hiron's confession. It seems like some coerced bullshit, but that also doesn't mean that Ed Edwards was committing these murders at the age of 12.
Gives a whole new meaning to flowers in the attic.
Oh, right. Maybe. Almost a less awful meaning, if I'm being honest. So this episode, episode 5, ends with John crying on the phone to his daughter. He's very broken up about how everyone's beaten up on him. And, you know, he's brought a lot of it on himself. And the sixth episode doesn't really, there's not really a crime that they're, like a major crime that they're pinning on him that would surprise anyone. But this is where they get into that Portland murder, which was Larry Payton and Beverly Allen. And this is the murder where Edwards shows up at the scene with a bullet wound and they arrest him and they let him go, basically. And what's interesting or really sad about this case is not only do they let him go after he makes one phone call to who knows who, but a few years later, they wrongfully convict two dudes for this murder that Ed Edwards clearly committed. Like, he was like, was he just there watching these two dudes commit this murder and got shot in the arm? Probably not. But
it's, you don't know really how they get these two guys. The weird thing is that one gets paroled after 3 years, one gets paroled after 7, and a double homicide, which never happens.
Right. A double homicide.
And something I've never ever heard of.
Including a rape. This was a rape and double homicide. And that makes it basically Eddie Jorgensen, who's the only one who's still alive. The other guy, I don't remember his last name, but he died in 2001. But Eddie Jorgensen basically was convicted on the testimony of a woman who was later proven to have mental health issues.
Lorraine.
And
she wanted to bed him.
Yeah. He said she wanted to go out with me, and I kept shooting her down, and she finally got mad and claimed,
bitches be crazy,
claimed that Eddie Jorgensen said things while he was drunk that implicated him in this murder, which only in the fucking Greatest Generation days would a fucking,
the clay flower pot days,
case like that fly through the courts and get someone convicted. Because that's like something, there's so many objections just from watching The Good Wife. I know there's objections you could make. It's hearsay, for one thing. It's hearsay.
Oh, is that where you get all your law knowledge?
Of course. Do you not watch The Good Wife?
No.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, probably a lot of things.
Okay. Well, one of them is that you're not watching enough Good Wife, and all the other things
too many good things to watch. That's why.
Yeah.
And I do devote a lot of time to television.
But yeah, this poor Eddie Jorgensen guy, send these two dudes to prison and then parole them, one of them after 3 years, one after 7, like you said, for a double homicide, fucking rape. And that is so much shittier. Like it's cool that they're out, but that's just,
well, he said it was a cloud that hung over his head, and he was sitting there because they met him for lunch, you know, and now he's, what, 80?
Yeah.
Whatever. He's
yeah.
like, looks like, you know, anybody's grandpa. He's wearing a Vietnam baseball cap.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, eating his food, and he was like, you know, I was a medic in the army or one of the, some sort of armed forces. You know, I saved all these lives, and then I come home and I have to, you know, deal with this. But then the cloud of suspicion, even though I was not exonerated, just because I was paroled and never right. left. So people think I'm a murderer. And then John Cameron says, you know, I don't think that you are. And he starts tearing up,
yeah.
lower lip quivering. And that's when I started getting teary eyed.
Yeah. And it's so shitty that they did it that way, because by just paroling him, like he said, that means you get out of prison as a convicted yeah. felon who committed a rape and double homicide.
I mean, anything.
And that's just with you the rest of your life.
That you apply for, you're yeah. putting it on there. If they have a question, are you a felon?
Yeah, you have to say yes.
You have to say yes.
And they
yes.
clearly knew they convicted the wrong people, or they yeah. wouldn't have paroled them after 3 and 7 years.
Right.
So at that point, just pardon them or do something to get that taken off their record But they didn't. And they just let these two live with that stigma the rest of their lives. So it's like they're another victim of Ed Edwards, basically.
And then John Cameron goes on to say, and the one nice thing, again, that I think is normal and very sweet is John Cameron, like, said, you know, I want to ask Eddie if I can see if I can get him pardoned.
And he actually filed the paperwork to do it. I don't know. They don't follow up and say, because this is kind of the end of this episode, they don't really follow up. And then that's when we get to the ending, which is, are we even spoiling the ending by saying there's not really an ending? Because it's just, there's no...
How was it supposed to end? You know what I mean? Like,
I think they were building up to a really good ending, which was, well, this John Canterbury has Ed Edwards' fingerprints and DNA, and we know from the taxicab killing that San Francisco PD has the Zodiac Killer's fingerprints and DNA. How about we compare the two and see if they... Yeah, let's heart emoji those two together and see if they match. And John Canterbury promises to do that and then just stops returning phone calls.
He sent them somewhere, but it wasn't to San Francisco. He did send them to a local murder. He sent them off, but he didn't send them off to San Francisco.
Yeah, it was something like that.
And then he just ghosts Wayne and John Cameron.
Fucking ghosts them. Yeah. Which, can we call him now? And
oh my God. I would.
What was his, John Canterbury? He was in Norton, Ohio.
I'll leave him a voicemail. What should I say? What should my opener be? Detective John Canterbury, I just saw a documentary, and I don't think it's very nice that you won't share the DNA that you found with the San Francisco Police Department. I'm calling and asking nicely for you to reconsider. P.S. Happy Father's Day. You have kind eyes.
The Happy Father's Day thing is a nice touch.
Okay.
Oh, he's on LinkedIn.
Oh, is he really?
Oh, but I'm not, so it's not going to let me look at his...
I am.
I mean, I am, but I don't want to sign in and do all that stuff. This is... Oh, here we go. I guess I'm just there. Oh, no. Wrong password. All right. It's not worth it, John Canterbury.
You give it one try. You are not John Cameron. I'll tell you that much. You gave it one half-assed try after complaining about having to log in at all.
Oh, maybe it'll work better now that I put phone number in. Well, here's the other problem. It's Sunday, so he's definitely not going to answer his work phone.
Yeah, I don't really... Like, actually want to, like, I'll leave a voicemail.
All right.
I don't want to, like, talk to him.
We'll follow up next episode and let you know.
How fun if we get drunk and then prank call him.
And solve the Zodiac killings.
That's how it would be done.
Yeah, yeah. That would be, I could see that
100%
happening.
100% by accident.
All right. So that's It Was Him, The Many Murders of Ed Edwards. Go out and watch it. Like I said, you can watch it for free on the Paramount Network. It's very easy. You'll figure it out. You're all tech savvy. What do we got to plug before we get out of here? This is a Patreon-only episode, so you don't have to subscribe to shit. Okay. You could give us good ratings and reviews on iTunes, though. We would appreciate that.
I found our sponsor. Do I read it or no?
Probably not on the Patreon-only episodes. We should do it on the free episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get you next time, D. Don't worry about it.
Her name is D. We're not calling her a dick.
I know. I met her in Iowa.
Good. You guys, like, prank called me at 8:30.
Oh, yeah. We were trying. Yeah, it was fun. You didn't answer. Well, yeah. No, you did. I remember. But you didn't want to answer.
I didn't want to answer. I'm not a phone person. Plus, I saw it was Chet's number. And then it was FaceTime. Like, fuck that.
Yeah, that's quite an intrusion. All right. Do you have anything else to plug before we get out of here? I guess not. No.
Just if you guys get a chance, please jot down in your calendars. August 25th at the Hollywood Hotel, we'll be doing a pretty scary live.
Live with Caitlin. Woo! Caitlin, do you have anything to say about that?
God damn it, Caitlin.
Wow. Making us look a fool.
I'm embarrassed.
I am humiliated.
It's almost like she's not only not here, but also not talking.
Yeah, yeah. It's like she's been absent.
If she acts up like this at our live show, mud in both of our eyes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Is Ed Edwards coming? We could have him kill her.
He's dead.
Shit! I forgot about that part.
But you know who's not dead yet?
Who's that?
Chet.
I know, and I promised.
One of these times.
Yeah.
You're going to get yours, Chet.
Oh! All right, let's get out of here. Carrie, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you. I'm going to go to the hospital.